Yeah.
Okay, so
well, I'm not worried about the write up, but if you have any ideas or anything that you found interesting that we can talk about that and put that out. It doesn't have to be one single thing, it could be multiple projects.
Sure. So the stuff that I talked at Symantec about was related to, you know, host site flash. And I don't know how that sort of an architecture fits into the overall plan for Symantec products. I didn't quite get a very good sense for that when I visited. It seemed like there were some people looking at host site flash.
Okay.
I think the two guys who came from the product group, Mihir was one of them, I think, and then there was another guy as well. And they were looking at host site flash, but I didn't quite get to talk to them in depth. About what exactly they intend doing with host site flash. So let me ask you, how in your opinion does host site flash, you know, fit into the plan for Symantec?
Well, so right now Mihir's group did implement host site cache, but its implementation is very naive. It is not smart at all. I mean, the eviction policy, I don't know yet. I still have to find that out. But from what I was told is that the eviction policy is suited to run just the TPCC benchmark. So, like I said, most of our workloads are Oracle-based, right?
Yeah.
And to evaluate their performance, everybody here uses TPCC. They use only TPCC benchmarks.
Okay.
And they just have optimized for the TPCC benchmark, but not for, well, we don't know what the workloads look like, and TPCC may not be a good representation of the workload. So, and right now the cache does is, it has some aging bit, and it just keeps whatever the content is in the cache for an X number of minutes, and then evicts it from the cache, whether it's accessed again or not.
Yeah.
But we have a very primitive algorithm for that. And I think they are trying to improve that, but I don't know how.
Okay.
They just wanted to get the architecture in place first, so they did focus on the algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
And now that they have it in place with VSSS, now they want to.
So how is it that they are managing the cache, or how is it that, at what layer are these guys managing the cache? In other words, is the cache part of, let's say, the storage system implementation?
It's on the, I'm not certain about this because the person I spoke to wasn't sure either.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I understand, both the active and the passive node has extra DRAM.
Okay.
Definitely SSDs. And that is what they use as intermediate layer.
Okay, so the active and passive hosts, you mean? And then there is a storage system that is shared between the active and passive hosts, or?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
So the idea is that active and passive have the same exact same configuration. So when one goes down, the other can come up and continue to serve.
Mm-hmm.
You can restart the Oracle application on the passive node and then continue to remove it.
Do you have to restart the Oracle?
Yes, that is how it works right now. You have to restart the Oracle. So the active passive is just, it is not like the true active passive where you would share the memory state and everything, so you don't have to restart the application and you can continue from where you left off. So yes, that is one thing that is potentially, that could be potentially useful.
I see. I see.
Because that is also a trivial problem. How much data you keep and how do you transmit the data and defend it.
Yeah, I think that is a difficult problem, because what we are talking about is building a state machine replication solution, right? Where anything that happens in one machine, well, any change of state, and by state here, I guess we are talking about memory state, any change of state, because storage state is shared, right? So that you don't need to replicate. So what is not shared is the memory state, and that would need to be replicated. Just give me a second. Hold on. And so the in-memory state would need to be continuously replicated.
Right, and so there are techniques to do that. I think the most recent and popular one that Intel uses, or Intel has, is NTB, non-transparent version.
Okay.
And that is what it really does. So you have to make sure that there's some research value to that and not just an engineering effort. If we have to go that route.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm not suggesting that that as a
as a route
yet, but
I understand. But that is something that has to be. That's something that we don't have right now.
Okay. Okay.
But there has been past research on this.
Okay.
People still have a solution.
Yes. That is true. That's a very good point. Okay, let's see. Host side flash. And the way they implement this host side flash with the high available active passive configuration is that they, whenever the change of the host side flash in one of the nodes happens, then the other node flash also makes the update?
Yes, correct. So they're connected with InfiniBand.
Okay.
So it's you know, just a few microseconds and second caches also.
I don't think I... So InfiniBand is the network between the hosts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So
in the active passive.
In the active passive. So how is...
Yeah.
So if the two hosts are not, let's say, active at the same time, then the passive host's flash device will not be updated as the active host is caching things.
Would you repeat that again?
So there has to be some, in other words, there has to be some other means of connection between the two flashes. The flash device attached to both hosts, because the passive host is not actually doing any processing,
correct,
and therefore would not by itself change the state of its flash.
Correct. Yeah.
So is it that?
So I think the passive flash is exported as a device to the active node. And it just writes to both the devices.
Oh, okay. I see. That's interesting. So it writes to... So whenever it updates the local copy, local flash, it also updates the mirror flash.
Right, yeah.
So in other words, the passive host flash device is a mirror of the active host flash device.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so okay, that's interesting.
Now, we had an intern here, and he worked on improving the performance for redo logs for the Oracle workload. So Oracle has different kinds of files that it writes, and one of them is the redo log file.
Okay.
Redo log writes are synchronous, and until the redo log file is done, or that write is done, write cannot be done.
Okay.
So the data write always waits for the read log file to happen, read log file write to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So he put the read log file write on SSDs and, DRAM, he tried with both. And he also tried it with the passive node only. He used the passive node memory because passive node is basically sitting idle doing nothing.
Yeah.
While the active is being processed. So he put the redo log, used that as a write back cache on the passive node's memory. And he did a bunch of tests to evaluate the performance. So that's something you could potentially do, and then use the passive memory only for redo log. The second thing is, I'm not completely clear on what the exact status of the implementation is right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for now they just use the cache, or they just use the flash in the active node. I'm not certain if they duplicate all that data in the passive node or not.
Right. Well, one of the risks of going in that direction is that it's an existing project. So it's something that has already started and maybe looked at in some detail before. So whatever is proposed will be more of a follow-up, right? I don't know whether that affects the proposal positively or negatively. I don't really know that.
So the idea is to do projects that are extended. So certainly, we might start with where they are right now, but
mm-hmm.
that doesn't have to be our final goal. You know, we can take that further and do smarter things with it.
Let me try to understand this project a little better. So the redo log is something that can be configured for Oracle, which
yes.
is you can set up to say that, well, use this specific device as your redo log.
Correct.
Could be a remote memory device. It could be remote
yes.
flash. I see. And is there some and supposedly this redo log, the performance of the redo log actually dictates application performance to some extent.
Right.
Because that's in some sense the bottleneck.
Right.
Okay. I see. One of the issues I see there is data loss, right? If you do not, let's say, keep the redo log in a reliable location, let's say the storage is reliable, because we assume that it is, and it has all the fault tolerance properties built in. And if the redo log is not in the storage system, it's sitting on some host side flash.
Yeah.
And if the host side flash dies or the host dies, then you lost the redo log. Which could mean that does it mean that you lose data?
Yes, that does if it's not on a persistent device. But if you're using it as a write back cache and you're regularly flushing it out to a persistent device, then it's okay because you don't lose the entire redo log. You still have some of it. Now you could still lose the part that is in your volatile memory, right? Because that goes when the system crashes.
But if there is a crash that takes out the entire host, including the flash, then
mm-hmm.
you could lose a lot more of the redo log than you want.
Yes, you could. But apparently the idea is to always bring up the database in a consistent state.
Okay.
So it's okay to lose transactions, but at some, you have to bring it up in a consistent state. It cannot be inconsistent. So even if you lose a lot of transactions, you still have something written on the redo log. You won't lose 100% of the redo log.
Mm-hmm.
The database is restored to whatever is in the redo log. So that's the trade-off the users have to make.
Yeah, so this new solution that caches the redo log in a persistent host-side flash could lead to data loss, which doesn't exist in the previous solution.
Wait, why would it lead to data loss if it is put on persistent storage?
Because host-side flash can actually doesn't have the same fault tolerance properties as the storage system. Right, so
the device itself is connected?
Yeah, or the host has some, let's say the host has a hardware failure, or whatever, or if the flash has a hardware failure, because there is no redundancy, and that's the only that is the only copy of the redo log.
Right. Okay. I see what you're saying.
You can lose the redo log, right?
Right.
The difference between this and the store and storing the redo log on the storage system is that the storage system is already built to be redundant and fault tolerant.
Right. Yes. Correct.
Right. So there is that loss of reliability or durability that occurs, and this is the same issue that we have with the work that I presented. Right, there is a staleness issue when you start caching writes in host-side flash.
So we had the same problem with the project managers because they didn't want to, when you put it in a product, you don't want to lose data.
Mm-hmm.
And so we also did tests with replicating the redo log on both active and passive mode.
Okay. See, that's much better.
Yes.
Yeah, you already, and that has to be persistent replication.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, but of course, there is some loss of performance because now you have to, every write needs to be made both locally as well as to the mirror host.
Microseconds, so that difference is not that high. But what happens is in the active node, it uses more, so we did this in memory as well, and it uses more memory. And that affected the overall database performance because Oracle also has, it also allocates SGA, like a global area in memory,
mm-hmm.
for its data files. And because we increased this size, the SGA had a smaller size, so that affected the performance. But there's several trade-offs there.
Oh, you're talking about keeping the redo log in memory now.
Yes. So like I said, we tried memory, we did with SSDs and I think NVRAMs as well. Several different...
Well, the memory is going to be much smaller than local flash, right? So... At some point, you will be slowed down because you cannot write more to memory as the memory is filled up. And then you have to wait to checkpoint transactions to...
But it turns out that you did some tests with there are different parameters to vary, but the idea is that you need a really small area in memory, like maybe just a few MBs.
Okay.
Less than 32 MB actually.
Okay.
For your redo log. And that's pretty trivial considering most servers now have at least 128 GB of memory. Because it's continuously being flushed to the persistent store, it's continuously being flushed to the hard drive.
Okay.
Right, so you just have to hold those requests until it's flushed to the hard drive.
I see. Well,
You can optimize the writes because you're sending in batches of writes versus a single synchronous write every time. So that.
I do understand. What is surprising to me is that a 32 megabyte redo log is sufficient to absorb all the bursts that a workload might have, because what you're essentially doing is absorbing bursts in that 32 megabyte, and the duration and the intensity of the burst is going to be dependent on the workload itself. Right, so
that is correct. And like I said, the trend here is to use TPCC, and TPCC doesn't have any decline. It is consistently just sends the request, there are no bursts, no nothing. And that's one of the problems I had. So we are trying to get the product team to run performance tests on this, all these different sets of configurations that we have.
Yeah.
With the real workloads and see what it looks like, if it's still the same or not.
Yeah.
We are in the process of trying to get that information.
Well, one potential project is to create let's say a more realistic evaluation framework, which also includes, among other things, burstiness within the workload, or models burstiness in the workload. And you can, I mean, we could, for instance, this TPCC workload, which is very popular there, and doesn't have any idle times in it, we could convert, or we could create a TPCC benchmark that is more configurable, with where you can specify, well, what is the request distribution? Because I think if I worked with TPCC a while ago, but they have these different query types, right? And so, right. So, and you can choose the sort of distribution of the query types in. Okay, the TPCC is an OLTP workload too.
Yeah, and TPCH is an OLAP, and I think that's where you can do the query.
Oh, okay. No, but even with TPCC, right? I mean, it's an online transaction processing workload where you would do inserts, queries, and so on, all read and write queries at the same time.
TPCC has only 5 operations, and I think it's like an ordering inventory kind of a thing.
Okay.
Where, you place an order and...
Correct.
It's an order, and
yeah.
And there are 5 queries, and I think it just cycles through each one of them.
Right, but I think you can choose the distribution of those queries. Yeah. TPCC is just a standard.
Yeah.
So there are various benchmarks that actually try to implement TPCC.
Okay.
Right. So you actually have to download a TPCC benchmark and install it, and then you get to run that specific benchmark that tries to mimic the workload that's specified by the TPCC standard.
Okay.
So there are many such implementations out there.
Okay.
I'm not sure which one you guys are using, but we've used a specific implementation in the past, and I'm just trying to recollect where it came from. Actually, I don't. I can dig it up.
Okay.
But regardless, I mean, that's not important. What I think is significant is that in the TPC standard, there's probably some specification of the distribution of various queries.
Right.
And it probably says, okay, for this kind of workload, the distribution should be such and such. I'm just looking this up. Detailed TPCC description. The frequency of individual transactions are modeled after realistic scenarios. Okay. So here it says that database must provide what are defined as ACID properties. And ACID includes durability, which means that you cannot have data loss, right? So using TPCC for a system that has data loss is not recommended, or is not it's not right, in other words.
Right, yeah. So he is the first of the HA part, right?
Right, so... just give me a second here. The required mix is defined to produce an equal number of new order and payment transactions, and to produce one delivery transaction, one order status transaction, and one stock level transaction for every 10 new order transactions. Okay, interesting. The TPCC metric is the number of new order transactions executed per minute. Okay, given the required mix. Why? Given the required mix. Okay, so I was wrong. It seems like TPCC actually defines exact ratios of various transactions. So it's not that you can, it's not that you can choose, okay, I want certain percentage of new order transactions and certain percentage.
Yeah, that's my understanding. What you can specify is the number of warehouses and the number of users. And
correct. You're right. Yeah. So I thought you could actually specify the mix as well, but you cannot. This TPCC itself defines the mix. Okay. But it doesn't talk anything about burstiness or any of that sort. Now, one thing which is a little bit troublesome is that TPCC requires ACID properties from the database. No, but if you stick a caching in layer and which with a redo log in front of it, that can get lost. Because I think Oracle also requires this the storage to be reliable, and then it can provide the ACID properties. But if you put the redo log in a non-reliable storage tier, which can disappear, then you have then Oracle will not be able to provide those ACID properties, right?
Right, and so what happens is it cannot recover, the database cannot recover from failure.
Yeah.
And so that's what we have to see, that whatever optimization we do doesn't end up there.
Yeah. No, I'm just thinking aloud about the project that you described to me, the intern project that you described to me.
Yeah.
Because that would have the problem, because you're sticking the redo log in memory. Unless you mirror it synchronously somewhere else.
Even if you mirror it to the passive memory, it's still the same problem, because you can have both passive and active load failures, and then you lose everything that is in memory.
You could lose both, but that's the same. I mean, you can say the same thing about storage, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you lose all your disk drives at once, then you lose the entire storage.
Right, but the redo log once is sent to the storage device, it is usually stored on a RAID, the redo log itself is not stored on a RAID, but with this, we can store it on a RAID, because then we can afford it to be a little slower.
Mm.
Right, and we can have redundancy there.
No, redo log, I think, is stored redundantly inside the storage. It has to be, because lose the redo log because of some storage level failure, then Oracle cannot guarantee durability anymore.
In the current without the intense optimization.
Yeah.
The way it works is that the redo log is written to the three files.
Yeah.
And it writes sequentially to these I mean, you can configure a number of files, but it's typically configured as 3 files.
Okay.
And when one file is filled, it starts writing to the other second file while the first file is flushed to backup and archival.
Okay.
And these files are stored on a set of drives. Typical configuration is 3 drives, so that's striped across it.
Mm-hmm.
And these are mirrored.
Okay. Okay, so there is...
There's the mirrored drive, and it is also being sent to the backup. The backup process is also taking care of it. It's archiving that every 7 to 10 minutes.
So mirroring is a RAID configuration? Okay, so all I was trying to say is that there has to be some redundancy at the storage level when you store the redo log, and you're saying it's mirroring, which is fine, right?
Right. Yes.
Because that allows the Oracle to claim its durability properties, because storage claims that it's storing data reliably under certain kinds of failures. With the caching layer, you can take the same model and say, okay, well, if there are no simultaneous failures of both the active and passive hosts, then Oracle can still meet the ACID properties.
Correct. And we are changing Oracle behavior if there are 2 node failures, because what we are saying is once you do a commit, we say that everything after the commit, everything before the commit or up until the commit is safe. So when if something happens and you have to restore your database, you will get everything that you
committed.
That you committed, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But with this new optimization, that is not true, because even though you say commit, your data could still be on the main, on your flash, and both nodes could go down, and you could lose that data forever if it's not persistent. If it's DRAM.
Okay.
Right.
So
the data, but then the idea is that the database will still restore to some previous commit point,
mm-hmm.
but not the one that the user thinks it is.
So I understand, Meera, but I think what I'm trying to get at is that even the storage system is not bulletproof, right? If you lose, let's say, in the 3-way mirrored system, if you lose all 3 drives at the same time, then you'll have data loss.
Correct.
It's exactly the same problem. And here you're saying that, well, we cannot tolerate the failure of both hosts simultaneously, the active and passive. It's similar in concept to saying that we cannot tolerate 3 disk failures. Right? And that's a reasonable model. I mean, if you are synchronously mirroring to another host, I think it's fine. I think you can claim a similar reliability property as you can claim with a mirrored system.
Mm-hmm.
Correct? Okay. So this intern project did synchronous mirroring?
Yeah.
Okay, so the redo log was stored in local memory as well as peer memory.
Correct.
Okay. Interesting. I think I'm curious to see what happens when the load increases 10x.
Right.
Instead of requiring 32 megabytes, you might require 320 megabytes to be able to absorb that burst. And then if it goes to 1000x, then it becomes 32 gigabytes, right?
Correct, yeah.
So that's the kind of questions that are unknown.
Right.
And the reason that's unknown is because, well, first of all, you could answer a basic question: what happens when the workload increases by 1000x by running, let's say, a lot more TPCC clients?
Right.
1000x the TPCC clients that you're running right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's one possibility.
Mm-hmm. So TPCC output is one of the outputs. It tells you where the
Shouldn't Oracle be telling you that?
Yes. No, this is the TPCC benchmark.
No, the TPCC benchmark.
I'm sorry, this is, let me check. It is Oracle. It comes from Oracle.
Yeah, that makes more sense, yeah.
So, yeah, it comes from Oracle. But once you run the TPCC workload, Oracle will tell you all this information.
Yeah.
And we didn't see a bottleneck in the redo log because of this, because the disks were so slow.
Mm. Yeah.
The hardware, you know, I mean, there are a lot of factors that come into play to make sure that that is the right.
Okay.
That you get the right performance. There are several parameters that you need to tune.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah.
So you're right. I mean, it's unclear how it will work on real workload with, you know, a lot more requests coming in, or with larger configurations than what we do.
Yep. So I mean, this is not really a research project, but one open question is, well, how do you create a benchmark that mimics realistic database workloads? Say a TPCC benchmark that uses the TPCC specification, but has an additional parameter which allows the user to specify burstiness.
Yeah.
I think that would be quite interesting. And then the mix of that TPCC dictates would be maintained, but there would also be this bursty behavior in the workload.
Yeah.
I wish someone has written such a benchmark, because it doesn't exist.
Yeah, not that I know.
And the reason I think this is important, because bursty behavior allows for a cache to actually work, because the cache only needs to be as large as to absorb the largest burst.
Right.
Right. And if you are running a TPCC workload which is 1000x the intensity, but it's sustained, then the cache layer is going to be pretty much useless, because it's
right.
going to be overwhelmed
right.
Over any significant duration. So the duration of the burst has also you know, a significance there.
Definitely, and that is, and you know, the 32 MB requirement may not hold.
Yep. Okay. So okay, let's see. So from what I'm getting so far, and also looking at the email you sent earlier, so Symantec is the primary product right now is the Veritas file system, right? At least on the storage side.
Yeah.
And it's mainly, most of the clients are using Oracle database running on Veritas. Okay. So a database workload and optimizing for a database workload is rather important.
Well, that is important, but then, like I said in the email, we can also explore white space. I mean, just because we don't have customers that are, you know, using something else other than Oracle doesn't mean we should never have them.
Okay.
We can also go after that market if it is potential, if
that's
a potential to make money.
Sure. So when you say in-memory RAM cloud storage, what exactly are you thinking of?
Do you know about the RAM cloud work?
I do know about the RAM cloud work.
Right. So basically everybody, one of the things that apparently was in SRL's pool of new projects was a RAM cloud-like approach, where you store everything. You have, you know, several nodes, and you stitch all the memory together and use that as your storage.
Okay.
can also make optimizations if your data size is, set is larger than what can be stored onto the cache. Well, you have a larger cache now because everything is stitched together. But if your data set is larger, then you have to choose what stays in the cache and what doesn't.
Hmm.
It's really like board. That could be one potential extension. But in this case, like I said, most of our configurations are active passive, but this will need more number of nodes. So maybe you could do a simulator first to simulate that scenario or something of those kinds.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, the RAM Cloud project is interesting. I mean, what it basically does is that, it always tries to use DRAM to serve queries, right?
Right.
It both reads and writes. And it's, and the argument is that you typically have sufficient RAM in your cluster that you can store all your active data in so that you never have to miss on a read from your cache, right? And so the detail is with the writes because you do need persistence. And from what I remember, the RAM Cloud guys actually manage writes optimize writes to disk-based storage, right? By doing log structuring of the writes,
yeah.
So that
right.
they can do and batching
larger sequential writes. Yeah.
Large sequential writes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a reasonable idea, and it works for some applications. It won't work, for instance, for something like Oracle.
Well, it might work for all applications, where you have to read a lot of queries, or you have sorts and joins. If you lose data, you know that the very worst, all those tables that are in memory just go away. But once you bring the system back up, it's still a person.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if it's a read-only workload, then it's fine.
Right, yeah. And all that's are mostly read-only stuff.
Right. So, yeah, I guess I was thinking about the OLTP variety of workloads, where you actually store data, right? And given that these databases require ACID properties from storage, then a RAM cloud-like architecture would be...
It won't work.
So Medha, is there what do the folks at Symantec think about all flash storage, especially let's say running like a Veritas file system? Veritas is clustered, right, or is it a local file system, a single node? I think it's single.
So cluster file system and a local file system both. It started off being a local file system,
okay.
But then they've added the clustering on top of it. A few years ago.
Okay. So something like are people exploring clustering VXFS with a bunch of locally attached flashcards?
No.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be a good proposal. But how will this be different from the current VXFS?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, do people think about that or deploy VXFS, clustered VXFS in that using that storage architecture where you have...
Including Fusion IO cards, but that's 6-tiered storage. It's not 100% flash based.
Okay, because I think the database storage requirements are not that large typically, right? So So conventionally databases, when stored on disk drives, are always, you know, optimized by short stroking the disk drives, right? Because you don't store as much data in the database. Or rather, the capacity requirements of databases are not that large. Which is why I was asking, does it make sense to just use Flash and cluster for capacity or scale out using clustered VXFS or Veritas file system?
I think the reason they're not using this is the cost.
Okay.
So they want to keep the hardware as simple as possible.
Okay.
And,
so it's mostly used in this single node configuration rather than clustered configuration?
No, the cluster, the active path is still clustered.
Hold on. So are you saying that the hosts are also running Veritas file system?
Yes.
Okay, so we are actually talking about a clustered Veritas implementation when you talked about the mirroring of the redo log.
Right, right.
Okay. I see. And so how does Veritas know that a certain file is a redo log so that it can put it in a Flash?
So ODM is the Oracle Driver Management or something.
Mm-hmm.
That will give you information on what file it is. It's a database file,
or
a redo file,
or under file. Okay, so Veritas knows about Oracle.
Right.
Okay, and it chooses to place files in specific locations.
Correct.
Based on that information.
Right. So this project that the intern did, he actually didn't do the implementation inside of VXFS.
Yeah, he was just evaluating the idea.
So, well, he used the Flash Cache, which is an open source project. Basically use cache as a write-back.
Okay.
We use a bunch of open source tools to do that, to specify what redo log, what device it should go to.
Okay.
This is the performance evaluation.
So he didn't use Veritas file system.
Well, this was on top of Veritas. So there was the Veritas file system, which was, and then he ran the TPCC benchmark on this Veritas file system. So it was using all its modules and everything. So he had one module for the read log, he had another module for the database files and so on.
Okay.
So he did use the Veritas module, but he didn't configure the memory or the cache, the device through VXFS. He did that external. So VXFS or all Oracle knew was this was where the redo log would go, and everything else was VXFS. So it is just repeated with just the performance evaluation. Now this has to be the product team has to integrate that into VXFS and see what the real performance is.
Okay, so the way I understand this then is that Oracle directly uses the local Flash without VXFS knowledge. Is that right? So in other words, the local Flash appears as a raw device, which is
right.
Not, which doesn't have a file system on it?
Yes, right. I think he used that as the VXFS file system.
Oh, that was a separate VXFS file system
yes,
instance?
He considered the device as a file system.
Hmm. That's interesting. Okay. I see. Okay. Okay, let's see. Well, where are we at? Okay, so now, so host side flash is a possibility, but it's not clear what exactly we could do with host side flash, right? Okay, what are I see some other things that you've listed here, which is storage level optimization, such as dedupe and compression, and device.
So that is the backup archival part.
Okay.
And I think there was a paper 3 years ago using ADC.
Okay.
Where they had some dedupe optimization, and they're using that right now in the product.
Is this from Symantec or some other?
Yeah.
You recall the name of the paper?
I'll send you the link. Do you want it right now?
No, you can send it to me later. Okay. And what you are working on right now is specific to workload, doing workload specific layout optimizations. Okay.
Yeah, and I'm trying to see if we can use any machine learning techniques.
Okay. Okay. All right. So I think I got a good sense for what are the possibilities. I need to think a little bit more. If you have some time, maybe tomorrow evening or tomorrow afternoon, your time, or day after, then we could maybe finalize something, because I know you had to send that write-up, right?
Yeah. Well, so tomorrow, I think before 11 my time, which is before 1 your time, I guess.
2.
And,
before 2 my time.
Before 2 your time, yes. And after 1 your time. My time.
After 4 p.m.? Yeah.
Yeah, so what is good for you tomorrow?
Let's do 5 p.m. my time.
Okay.
That would be 2 p.m. 2 p.m. your time.
Okay.
And so the same time as today.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
I'll probably be leaving my office earlier, so we'll have to connect using my cell phone. And you have my number, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll let me think about this some more.
Yeah, and then there's also the, we haven't talked about virtualized environments, right?
Okay.
I'm not sure how that architecture works with VXFS, but there's plenty to do there too, I think. So that's something we could talk about tomorrow. Let's try to find out more about that.
So virtualized, what do you mean by
that?
Over
VMware, VXFS and VMware.
Okay. All right. Yeah, we can talk about that as well.
Yeah. All right, Roger. Thanks, and I'll call you on your cell phone anytime tomorrow.
Okay. Sounds good, Medha. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Yeah, if you have any questions, you can call me or email me.
Yep, I'll do that.
Yeah, I'm usually more... I don't usually check my semantic email.
Okay.
Work, so you can use my Gmail and respond faster to that.
Okay, sure. I'll do that. Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.